This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast.
PatCast coming to you from Nashville, Tennessee. At least half of it is. Jeff Patterson of TSN 1040. I have moved on from New York to the final stop on this six-game road trip for the Vancouver Canucks. Smashville, as they call it. Botch is back home in Vancouver. The podcast is always a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM out in Coquitlam. They're proud sponsors of the BCHL Coquitlam Express. They're your number one overall pick for selection and inventory. Check them out in Coquitlam, two blocks west of Coquitlam Center, 2595 Barnett Highway, or visit them online, eagleridgegm.com. They got the great website, and you can start your search there and then take it to the lot when you know exactly what you want in the way of a new ride. Hey, Botch, we're missing you out on the road. I survived New York six nights in the big city. I got out of there. I saw Barclays Center last night. Didn't see much of a hockey game there last night, but on to Nashville now. One last stop before heading on home.
Yeah, and like I have so, like it's such a different experience being, as you know, like being on the road as opposed to being at home when the team's away. Like, and it's, I almost need another guy, like when I'm at home, another guy on the road doing the Provies, because I feel like I'm missing, like I'm not getting the complete, because I try to listen to 650 and 1040, I try to listen to you and try to read the, you know, as much as I can consume, and I still, like for instance, I still don't understand the Anders Nilsson Rangers story where he might have been sick. Was that not the reason he wasn't sick? Now he wasn't. Could have been a slight cold. Can you detail for me right now? Because this is one of, I still don't get the goalie deployment by Travis. None of it really makes any sense to me. At the beginning of the year, it was kind of laid out that they would kind of pick starts based on opponents, and it seemed like a brilliant idea. We're definitely not, they're definitely not doing that right now. Markstrom still gets most of the starts, and there's always these bizarre excuses as to why Nilsson doesn't get the starts. Because at the beginning of the year, if you remember, Markstrom was going on a run, and Green said, well, you know, at one point, he actually said this, like the beginning of preseason, Nilsson didn't feel on top of his game, so I didn't feel like he was ready. He actually said that and didn't feel like he was ready, even though he admitted that by the end of preseason, Nilsson was on his game. But he said, I didn't go with him to start the season because at one point in preseason, Nilsson didn't feel on top of his game. Now we get the story, or at least I've heard bits and pieces this month, that Nilsson may have started the Rangers game, but he was sick. Now, can you, being there, give me the full rundown of this one, because it is on top of mind for me.
All right, I'll do my best, and I'm not sure that I have a full grasp of it either, because I went into that Rangers game fully expecting that to be Anders Nilsson's game. Markstrom was okay in New Jersey, but they lost, and that seemed to open the door to me. They'd been alternating at that point, so if the pattern was going to continue, then Sunday at Madison Square was Anders Nilsson's game. And you know, it was a 2 o'clock start local time, so no morning skate. Travis did one of his now world famous media availabilities before the. And by the way, that one was bizarre too, because there were like 20 guys standing around, and guess who was the only one asking questions? Me, yeah. Like, and I'm looking for some backup and some help, and there's a bunch of New York guys around, and nobody wants anything to do with Travis. They just want the info. Everybody, give me the info.
They'll take the quotes. They'll take the information.
Right.
I'm not going to ask any questions.
So, you know, Goldie had just rolled in. That was a little sideshow there. He came with the bag. He rolled into Madison. He looked like he'd come right out of a J. Crew, like, photo shoot, by the way, as he made his way. Like, mostly the guys are in suits and stuff. But he had traveled, I think, from Montreal that night. So, you know, it was kind of casual Goldie. You know, the sweater and the toque and the whole bit. And, like, he looked like he stepped out of a catalog and was ready to play in the NHL, but he didn't get his chance there. But, yeah, that's where we found out that it was going to be Markstrom. And Travis didn't really elaborate before the game. And then after the game, I did ask. I said, you know, was this always Markstrom's game? Because, let's be honest, the Grabner goal was pretty crappy. And the shootout, you know, the Canucks did well to score, to give them a chance to win. They needed a save twice, didn't get it. You know, and he gives up three on the seven shootout attempts, so it wasn't a great afternoon for Jacob Markstrom. And so I sat out, like, was this always a Markstrom start? And then that's where Travis said, well, you know, Nielsen's kind of been under the weather a little bit. And he said because there was no morning skate and he hadn't played in a while, that didn't seem to line up for Nielsen. So that made it a Markstrom start. Then last night after the game on Long Island, I asked Nielsen, I said, oh, by the way, were you under the weather on Sunday? Was that, you know, are you all right now? Like, you feel better? Is that why you didn't play? And he said, oh, I had a cold last week, like in Pittsburgh, which feels like about, that feels like 3 weeks ago now that they were in Pittsburgh. And he said, I had a cold, but no, I was good to go. I was totally good to go. I could have played on Sunday. And so, you know, again, I'm not sure where the truth lies, because apparently he had a little cold, but that was Pittsburgh, and this was New York on Sunday afternoon, and he sat and watched from the bench.
It is odd, for sure. The when I start hearing the excuses, and that's similar to the one I heard at the start of the year, which I outlined where, you know, because I asked Nielsen about it. Were you not feeling on top of your game? He goes, yeah, I was the beginning of training camp. Like, of course I wasn't feeling on top of my game. But by the end, I felt great. Like, I was ready to start the season. I just find it weird, these excuses that are cropping up. And I know a lot of people are going to point to that Islanders game and say, like, look, Nielsen got his chance and he didn't come through. But at some point, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, if you continue to only give him one start a week, one start every couple of games, one start every three games, it becomes more difficult for him to shine. It becomes more difficult for him to find a rhythm. It becomes more difficult for him to excel. And, you know, it's very hard for me to judge him on that game against the Islanders because the team sucked all around him. Yeah, okay, one of the goals wasn't great, but the other four, he really didn't have much of a chance, and he's hardly played. Like I don't understand why you can't play this guy. Like, why is it Markstrom? It boggles my mind, and these excuses I find are a bit bizarre, and obviously we're not going to have an answer to that. And the other thing that stuck out for me that I need to get out of here right off the bat is you had a sit down with Drance, I saw, and you had a pic of the two of you. And like he's wrote this book, and it's a really good book. I don't know if you picked it up, but I do think that it could be kind of an essential thing that every Canucks fan, every real Canucks fan needs to own, because it goes over.
Well, isn't that the name of the book? the name of the book is something about something every Canucks fan needs to do or own or what, isn't it?
Right. But it could be full of shit, right? Like, you could have that name
right,
and then have nothing inside of value. And I will say, and you can tell me how to catch me up on how Drance is doing, but the publisher originally, and I don't know the order, but contacted both Murph and me and maybe others about writing the book. I just know what happened between Murph and I. Contacted both of us. We both separately, without knowing, emailed the publisher back and said, no thanks, but we know the exact guy that should do this book. And we both said Drance, and found out later. And it is a great book. I think that it would have been, I just can't imagine how much better it would have been if he, in the middle of it, he didn't end up taking this job with the Florida Panthers and then have to kind of split it with Halford. And Halford came in, and I've read it, and it's really good. Like I said, I think everyone should own it, but I do wonder how, like, what level it would have hit if Drance had put all of his time and intention into it instead of in the middle of it taking that job.
All right, a lot to unpack there, because let's just go back to Nielsen for a quick second. He had this cold in Pittsburgh. Remember the third period in Pittsburgh? Like, the Canucks were under siege, and he was unreal. Like, he played through this legendary cold on whatever night that they all run together. But he fought through the cold to stone Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins, and yet 4 days after the cold was unfit to face the New York Rangers at Madison Square. Interestingly enough, you know, when he was asked last night about how difficult it is to, you know, be at his best when he's not playing much, you know, he went down this road of, well, last year in Buffalo, you know, I only played every five games. Like, and it sounded to me like a guy that is resigned now to the fact that if there was a battle, he's lost it, and he may never get his chance to run with the ball. That was the first time I kind of heard him go down that road with, like, I've been the backup, I'm, you know, here I am again, and it's my job to stop pucks whenever. But, it, I mean, that's tough as hell to get in there and be at the top of your game. You know, I feel for the guy in some sense, because you're right. The team in front of him last night was brutal. I think you called it maybe their worst game. The Anaheim game's right up there. Vegas was pretty bad too. But, you know, they went into that thing last night, and I don't know what this group. Like, it's funny. You know, remember the Los Angeles game? Good comeback with Dorsett fight and the power play changes. And they erased a 2-0 deficit, and they won 3-2. And then the next game against Vegas, they erased a 2-0 deficit. And they just looked like a group that thought, hey, we did it the other night. It's going to happen again. It's just going to happen. And it didn't. Vegas stomped them. And then last night, like, they had to know that the Islanders are a hell of a team. Even if people around the league aren't really talking about the Islanders, like, that's a good-looking team right now. And it just seemed to me that the mindset of the Canucks was, ah, you know, we outplayed the Rangers on Sunday. We'll do it again here. Like, it's just going to happen. And then about half the team, maybe not even half the team, shows up. And they were dreadful, like the breakdowns, the defensive coverage, just the energy. Like, you know, they did well to respond to the shorthanded goal early, but after that, there really wasn't a whole lot of pushback. As for Drance, couple things. One is, somewhere in that long list, the publishers approached me as well. So I was
Would
on.
You also recommend Drance.
I was on that list. But that was during my layoff, or layoff, whatever it was. Yeah, I got laid off. And honestly, I didn't know what my future was, and I didn't want to take on this project if I was going to change gears and get out of the business entirely. And so I considered it, and I liked the, you know, there was some vanity involved, like having your name on a book for all time. Like, I contemplated it, but I'm glad it fell into their hands, and I'm kicking myself because I have a copy sitting on my desk at home, and I meant to bring it out on this road trip, but I don't know if I would have time to read, because you probably saw some pics. I was running around New York City. I don't know if you would have been happy for me, but I spent yesterday morning cruising through Central Park. It was just a glorious sunny day, my last full day in New York. You know, I did all the touristy things, Times Square, Rockefeller Center, up and down, you know, Fifth Avenue, whatever the case, a little Black Friday shopping. So I got around New York City. And somewhere in there, Drancer looked me up and said, hey, we got to get together. Florida was in town. They played the Devils and then the Rangers last night. And so he had a spot. Of course, Drance had a spot in New York City, right? Like, I've been there. I've been there a couple times. I don't have spots yet. Like, I don't know that city well enough. I'm still exploring the city. But Drance had a spot, which did not surprise me in the least. And who was I to argue with Drance when he recommends a spot? So the restaurant was named Parm, and as you can imagine, it was an Italian joint. And
yeah, he loves Little Italy there.
Yeah. So this one was up by Central Park, because that's where his team was staying. So. We had a nice little sit-down lunch yesterday, and we caught up, and we had a lot of ground to cover. But, again, this is his place. So he had been there before. He had a favorite. Like, he didn't even have to look at the menu. He just kind of waves the waitress over. Me, and again, the place is called Parm, right? So chicken parm is their thing.
Right.
Inadvertently, though, I wasn't feeling chicken parm. I ordered some sort of pasta dish. And Drance waved me off. He waved me off.
What?
He wouldn't allow the waitress to take my order. And he told me that, no, in no uncertain terms, you cannot have the pasta here. It's a Parm place. You're having Parm. And so...
She had to order Parm.
Yeah. Oh, and, like, he's ordering with all, like, you know, again, he's been there. He's got the special orders, and he's asking for secret sauce on the side. Like, he's explaining to the waitress, that orange sauce. You know the orange sauce. Bring me the orange sauce. And sure enough, they bring him a little, like, boat of the orange sauce.
That sounds awful to me. That sounds terrible. Oh my god!
No, the
run by Drancer.
But he knew what he was talking about because the lunch was terrific. We had a good lunch. The meal was good. The conversation was good. We, as you said, took a selfie. First one wasn't very good, so we took a second selfie that made the province last night, or the province, as I figured it would. But no, he's doing well, and you know, we're gonna see him. I think the Canucks and the Panthers play twice in a week span in February, so we'll get our fill of Drancer then. But it was good to catch up, and he mentioned he's a loyal listener of the podcast.
Oh, he
still
is.
Oh yeah. No, he recited episodes. He knows the themes. No, absolutely. No, he was, at times he was critiquing the podcast. You guys got to do a little of this. You should do that. You know, like, you know. No, he's still got his hands in just about everything that's going on.
Jeez, he's still in touch with the Canucks bubble, is he?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. Yeah.
What does he have any tips for us? Like, what's his? Does he have any good podcast tips you can share with me?
No. He was quite happy to hear that we were, you know, trying to help some of the young ones that are trying to make their way into the biz, because he is a guy that came up unconventionally and worked his way to this position of prominence. And I think you and I agree that he kind of did it the right way. And there are a few that maybe aren't following his footsteps exactly. And he got a kick out of the fact that we've kind of, you know, strong-armed them a little bit just to get on board with the program.
No, I know I joke about Drance a lot, and he is a funny dude, but I so admire the way that he attacked the job, and, you know, you've seen it, I've seen it. Like, the guy was relentless in the job, and I would like to think if I came around now, you know, and I was in my 20s trying to get a foothold, I would try to follow the exact same kind of footsteps that he followed. I think that he was on his way to doing things that few of us have been able to do, and that's mixed like great storytelling and quotes. We've talked about it before with analytics and great questions. You know, he never lacked for confidence, and maybe inside, like, that was my view of him, and maybe inside he had some anxiety. I'm sure he did when he first started, and you know, I think that we've seen that from the timidity of some of the others. But man, if a young guy came around now to me and said, like, how am I going to make it in this business? I would be like, you got to go. Like, I almost feel like Drance needs to write a bio or something.
Right. Another book.
Another book. If only that could have been the foreword of his book. And I would have been like even more enthusiastic about this book. But I think that he honestly has the model of how you make it in 2017.
The guy, like, look, from my first meeting with him, he hustles. He's a hustler, right? Like, and I mean that in the best sense, not a hustler, like he's trying to pull a fast one on people. This is a guy that just, like, you know, he's a self-starter, and the way he managed the Nation's Network, like, he was pulling so many levers and trying to keep so many balls in the air as he was juggling to make all that happen, the way that he, you know, got me to the draft the one year on behalf of Canucks Army. You know, he's working with high ups in the NHL to pull strings.
It's always in meetings with, like, higher ups.
Oh, no, he was telling me about his work day. Like, he lives like 40 minutes from the rink down in Florida, but he says those are the best 40 minutes because, you know, he's on conference calls, hands free all the way to the rink, and those are 40 minutes that he values. So if you're trying to reach him any morning, just know that he's got important phone calls going as he commutes to the rink down there in Florida. Look, I got to tell this story here. I wish you'd been here along the way for this whole trip. But you probably saw, honest to God, one of the worst moments of my life. Now, maybe it speaks to how, you know, little hardship I've faced in the big picture in my life. But I dropped my phone between the Prudential Center in New Jersey and Newark's train station. There's a 4-block. You've done it before. I came out of the rink with iMac and Kuz after the Canucks practice on Monday, and we were walking to the train station, the three of us, and Kuz was regaling us with the stories of the night before. He had been out on the town in New York City, and Ian was engrossed in the story, and I'm fumbling for my phone, and I can't find it. And, like, it just, when I think of what my phone means out on the road. I mean, I use it as a recording device, so it's a work tool. It's got all my travel info, my personal info. And I shit myself right there on the street. And I went into a full, well, first of all, full sweat, and then a full sprint to retrace my steps. And as I'm doing, I'm screaming at these guys. And again, Kuz is just telling this story, and Ian can't get enough of it. And they completely missed the fact that now I'm bolting back to retrace my steps. I had to go back like 3 blocks, and thank God, like it was just sitting on the sidewalk. Wow. Nobody had come along. The weather was good. You know, like it was just, I got so many good bounces there. But in the meantime, so I've gone back 3 blocks. I find my phone. I can barely catch my breath. And now I'm running for the train. And I get to the station, and I run into these guys, and Kuz says, "Hey, what happened? Like, we thought you got mugged."
What?
And I said, "Did you come looking for me?" "No." The two of them, they're wondering where I've gone. They
got mugged.
Yeah.
They were going to move on, hop on their train, less competition for the next story.
I suppose
who's,
so.
Who's going to ask Green the questions now, though?
Yeah, exactly. Anyhow, all's well that ends well. I got the phone. I'm recording a podcast on it right now. But, yeah, I was scared shitless there for a couple of minutes because it's just not – and I'm a pretty responsible guy. I don't lose things generally. So I think that just upped my panic level at that. But, again, we're all good now. So hopefully the phone stays with me. Otherwise, out here on the road, oh, I got to the bottom. You probably saw. You know, I like to be a man of the people, and we get these questions. You know, sometimes these sort of weird Canuck stories evolve, and I get people that, oh, you got to get to the bottom of this one. So I finally pulled Tanev aside because the Star Wars sucks.
I was just so pissed at this because, like, when you do that, like, I want to be around so I can detail all of the back and forth because it must have been an amazing, like, the people need to know the back and forth. Like, we need to know the exact words almost of what it's like when J-Pat and Tanev are having a discussion about Star Wars socks. So I was pissed that you decided on the road when I'm not around to have this conversation. But now you're obligated to explain how did he react and what did he say when you asked about these Star Wars socks of his.
All right, quick backstory for people that don't know. The day that he left the team and down in Anaheim, there was a photo of a bunch of guys out in front of the team hotel waiting for a bus. And Tanev was in full recline mode, sort of business cash dress. And at this point, we didn't know that he wasn't playing. So he just looked like a guy that was waiting for the team bus. And Granlund's there, and Gaunt's, and Edler's on his phone, and, you know, the usual stuff. And Tanev, in recline, like, the pant leg riding up a little bit, and these Stormtrooper socks are on full display. And people were just, like, they freak again. Like, the stuff that people freak out about with this team and these players, but these Star Wars socks became a thing. And, like, honestly, I felt it was like a diversion tactic. Like, he didn't want people to be checking out his thumb in this photo if they were looking for any sort of evidence of injury. So he goes with the full Stormtrooper socks. Now, that was Anaheim. What was that? That was the last trip. That's a couple weeks ago. Things had passed, but the socks had come up in conversation, and I'd seen people tweeting at me about the socks, and they wanted to know. And so finally, after practice in New Jersey the other day, I talked to Tanev. Like, I talked to him about, you know, he's back in the lineup. So we did a hockey chat on the record with the microphone. I'm interviewing him. And then somebody else came in and wanted to carry on the conversation. Like, I was going to just back end my interview with the Star Wars questions. But then somebody else came, and I thought, I'm not going to go there. So I moved around the room. I left Tanev. He went back in the other side of the dressing room. And then I saw him coming out like he was going to leave. And I was like, no, I got to jump in here. This is the time. The time is now. So, you know, not off the record, but off microphone, I just went up to him. I said, hey, I said, stupid question. Hear me out, but please play along. And I got this look like, don't go there. Don't go there. Don't do it. And, but there was also, I think there was like a look in his eye that like, there was a little intrigue too. Like, what are you getting me? Where are you leading me? So I said, all right, like there's been all this chatter. I kind of set it up for him with the picture. And I said, people want to know about the Star Wars socks. I said, like, what is the story there? And he laughed. And actually, you know, as I started to explain that I was wanted to go down the Star Wars road, like, his eyes brightened. You know, like, all of a sudden, he's invested now. Like, this Tan Man that doesn't get, you know, he sees us coming, and generally he's looking for the nearest exit. But Star Wars comes up. So I said, what's the story with the Star Wars socks? And he kind of laughed. He's like, the Stormtroopers? I was like, yeah. I said, are you a big Star Wars guy? And again, this big grin comes over his face. Like, he's lighting up now. And I said, are those part of your regular rotation? And he nodded and said, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then I said, like, did you buy them or did somebody buy them for you? And that seemed to kind of puzzle him. He had to think on that one for a little while. And then he said, I think my girlfriend bought them for me. And
I did not know how you got Stormtrooper socks. I do not remember how you got Stormtrooper socks. Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
So, you know, I didn't carry on too much further with it. I can't remember. There were probably a few other questions, but I should have asked, like, are they on this trip? You know, that would have been a good one. I should have, if he's got a collection, like, are there, you know, there's enough Star Wars characters out there. Like, you could have, you know, quite not a collection of Star Wars socks, or maybe it goes beyond socks. Maybe the whole wardrobe, who knows? Anyways, bottom line is
he's a legitimate fan though, yes, of the, yes, the movies, yeah, the franchise and the Star Wars.
Yeah. See, I'm not a huge Star Wars guy, so, like, I couldn't really.
Me there, I can go down the road. Yeah.
I couldn't engage him. Like, if he
what does he have? Does he have a Millennium Falcon model?
Right. Yeah. No.
So these are things. His favorite. What's his favorite Jedi?
Right.
These are things that he now needs to be. So I'm gonna have to broach this at some point, some other point at the tail end of an interview, I guess.
But he's
if he lights up again.
This is sort of where we are with this team, though, right now, is I'm finding myself, like, he's kind of my go-to guy on the defense.
That's
like, I know, but Edler, I tried to talk to Edler last night, like, the shorthanded goal, you know, they win the face-off, and the puck, like, yeah, I thought it skipped right over his stick. He was trying to tell me that it was out of his reach. Like, it was about 6 inches from his skates, and he told me it was out of his reach, and he didn't like the question. Like, you could tell he didn't like the question. But like, you know, Edler gives you the silent treatment at the best of times, but he kind of doubled down on the silent treatment last night once I asked him about, like, what went on with that shorthanded goal and how come you weren't able to corral the puck. And he tried to tell me it was out of his reach.
Man. I'd have to rewatch. I'm gonna have to rewatch that one. It seemed like he could have got it. He was just either late. He seemed almost frozen in time. Like he was looking down the boards. I noticed this when I was watching it the replay a few times last night. Like, he was really late in looking over to his left and seeing the puck go out of there. It's like, right, it's almost like he missed. I think it was Henrik that lost the battle there on the side.
Yeah, and it kind of got chopped. It got chopped back to the point. It came back. Maybe he wasn't expecting it to come as quickly as it did. But
No, there was no way. The way he was looking, there was no way it was going to come that way. Like, even if Henrik had got it, it was going to go to his
except
left.
Except that it did.
And he was late to it. No, it wasn't a great Edler game. And it was a great Tanev game. Is he still wearing any kind of thing on his?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
that's,
yeah.
Oh, he is. Okay. Because yeah. I was watching, I've been watching him since he's back. He doesn't look right, and he's not playing, like, he just, you know, I don't want to, he's not soft, but he just looks softer on the puck than he has usually. And I thought last night was an unusually difficult game for the Tan Man, and I did leave that game thinking, I think he's still hurt. So he is still wearing some kind of brace on the thumb?
Yeah, it's like a protective plastic cap that, and I'll see at practice today sort of how long he has to wear it, but there's no doubt he's still wearing it, which indicates that, you know, he's not 100%. So.
No, I don't think he is, because originally he was going to try to play, like, the thumb was broken, and he was going, like, guys play with broken fingers and broken thumbs, you know, it's not unusual or uncommon for players to do that. And I think they were looking at a 6-week timetable for it to be fully recovered. I think we're only in the week 5 or 4.5 or something like that now, whatever it is. I don't think we're at 6 weeks, even close to it yet. So, and he was going to try to play through it at first, but then they decided, no, it was too much risk in terms of re-injury for him to do that, and that's why that's why they sent him back for a while.
You should have seen the scene at Barclays Center. Like, Travis Green, he was drafted by the Islanders. He played 6 years there, but he was not a star by any stretch for the New York Islanders, who've won Stanley Cups and have had some great players over the years. And, like, the crush of people waiting to get a piece of him before the game was incredible. Like, it was, like, think of the longest receiving line you've ever seen at a wedding and, like, double it. It was ridiculous. Like, Stan Fischler's waiting for him with a book. He wants to give Travis a copy of his latest book. I don't know if... the TV play-by-play guy was down in Utica when Travis was there, so, they greet a big hug. Butch Goring does TV here now, or on Long Island. He was Travis's coach in Spokane. Like, it just, the list went on and on. Rink workers and staff and training staff of the Islanders and people that, I no idea who they were, but, like, he shook so many hands before the game, and that's why I kind of felt like the team... I don't know if they screwed their coach, but they certainly let him down. Like, he was trying to downplay it the day before, but, there's going to be a handful of games, and he played for a bunch of teams, so it's not like the only team he played for. But I do think this was his first team. He waxed on about what Al Arbor had meant. Kuz wrote about that. I do think it meant something, even though it's a different building now. And I kind of thought the players owed it to their coach. There'll be a handful of games along the way where... maybe you do want to win one for the coach. And I kind of think they dropped the ball on him last night.
Yeah, it looked to me like a team that was in a city for a couple of day or two too long. I'm sure, you're in New York City for six nights in the same hotel. Like, it's not just going to be hotel, rink, practice, play. You're going to get out and do things. And, maybe it didn't happen this way, but it looked to me like shenanigans and 6 days, one city, New York City, it caught up to him because that was a collective egg laid by that entire team. And the Sedins were – like, that line was bad. That was a bad line. Horvat's line couldn't do anything. That was the – it was a game – if you had known heading into it, I think I would have played Goldobin no matter what. Because they still can't score. Like, the biggest problem that the Canucks have still is goals. Like, it's going, as much as they want Vertanen to hit, and as much as they want Sutter to lead the team in minutes and be the matchup guy, you still need to score goals. And since the start of 2015, this is the lowest scoring team in the NHL. You have a guy in Goldobin who's certainly shown some electricity in the NHL. He has the chance to give a team a jump. And I think heading into that Islanders game, if for whatever reason you had predicted, sleep doctor analysis or whatever, that potentially could be a down game, the end of this epic New York stay, like, that was the time to try to inject Goldobin into the lineup. I do think he can give them some jump if allowed, but I'm still not, like, even when you take, like, when even when I see pictures, you snap that picture of him, he kind of has, like, this doe-eyed, his eyes are as big as saucers, and he has this, he does look like 16, 17 almost. And, people tend to talk about him like he's this kid, but he's 22 years old. Like, he's the same age, born the same year as Bo Horvat. Like, he's played 136 AHL games, man. Like, he's a professional, and he should be ready to play.
And I think he will, Botch. I think... that Alex Burmistrov thinks that Nikolai Goldobin is probably going to play as well. And I want to get into this because I think you raised an exceptionally important point in this whole Goldobin development in the province last night. But did you see Burmistrov? He didn't play much last night. And as the game is sliding away and he hasn't done anything, like, when he got his shifts, he was like, give me all the ice time. I'm never leaving the ice. He had back-to-back shifts of, I think, a minute and 25 and a minute and 39 seconds, which, just in the NHL, like, unless you're buried in your own zone and you can't get off the ice, and that happens from time to time, but I don't think that was the case. Like, it was just like, I'm out here and I'm not coming off the ice because I'm probably not going to play the next game, and I may not play for a while now. So that was kind of my read on it last night for Marie Streff, because it was a forgettable game for him. He wasn't alone last night, but I do think that somebody's got to come out of the lineup. I guess the question is it going to be Marie Streff, or, you know, does Jake become the fall guy? Because after a good game at Madison Square, you know, he had a tough one last night.
Yeah, and I was just, I just took a break to talk with Broffenhelfer, and I was kind of on a, giving my Vertanen spiel on like, I just have so many questions about this whole Vertanen thing. Like, it doesn't, all out of all the decisions, like, there's been some curious ones, and there's been some really good ones that Travis Green, like, I think that he's doing a really good job with this team, even though, you know, they're basically 500. And you know, they're not in a playoff spot at this moment. But the one that doesn't fit, like, I can find almost rationale for any of the decisions he makes. The one that doesn't fit here to me is Vertanen. Like, I don't understand why he thinks that playing Jake 9 minutes, 10 minutes a game, like he's doing, is going to get. He talked about, well, you may not see the best Jake Vertanen until he's 24. Well, how are we ever going to get the best Jake Vertanen if he's playing 9, 10 minutes a game, even if the in the games like the Rangers one, where he's great, like everything was going for him, he was feeling it and instincts, and you know, you could tell he wasn't thinking, it was just all instinctual. On the nights that it's going like that, and he still only plays 10 minutes and 1 second, I'm sorry, like, that's not enough. Like, you're not, it's hard. It's really, really hard to turn a power forward into a guy that can hit, can score, can skate, can make an impact. It's why they're so precious in the NHL. There's very few of these guys because it's really hard to develop one. I don't think, honestly, I'm looking at it right now, I don't think that the way to do it is all season long Jake plays 9, 10 minutes a game, because this is the point that I'll come to and ask you, if that happens, what's going to change for next year? Like, do you think next year he's going to trust him killing penalties? Do you think next year he's going to be on the power play? I'll say no. Like, how is, if we go like this, how is anything going to be different next season?
I do think that he would be more likely to see power play time than he would penalty kill. I just don't think Travis Green has any designs on Jake Vertanen being a penalty killer for him.
The power play.
And so I do think there are ways you could probably work him in on the power play. And I'm with you. Like, the Madison Square game took me back to Detroit, and not just because he scored, but, you know, the way he scored, the way he was skating. The one thing that I don't get right now, and people have been pointing this out on social media, and so, you know, I've watched these last couple of games, and I agree, this notion of Jake coming down the wings and just, like, shooting from, like, the outside of the circle. Like, it's a bizarre, it's such a low percentage shot, and he's got such a good shot. You look where he scored. At Madison Square, you look where he scored in Minnesota that game, the only goal, the 1-0 win. You know, he gets to the high danger area and he can use his shot. What I don't see, remember when he came back from the World Juniors and had that stretch of games a couple seasons ago? And he just tantalized us all because he used his speed effectively and then was able to, like, cut hard to the net and make some things happen. Like, that's been eliminated from his game entirely. And if he's going to be this power player, like, he's got to find a way to get the puck to the net. And Travis Green admitted that, you know, shot selection and shot location is something that they are working with him on. But, like, where Bo Horvat always tries to do the inside out on guys, and last night he went around the outside and it worked for him. But Jake doesn't do the inside out. Jake got the speed. Like, and you've pointed it out. You did it again last night in the Prov. He's like, there are times where he builds up speed. He's got to step on the defender. And for whatever reason, he ends up pulling up and shooting, where I'd like to see him, you know, kind of use his leverage, use that speed and his size, and try to get around a guy and either cut hard to the net for a scoring chance or, you know, force the defenseman to grab you, trip you, hack you, whatever, and maybe you draw a penalty for the hockey team.
Honestly, like, you've struck on, like, what I think to be probably the biggest issue with him. And I went back at the end of last season, and I watched a lot of Jake in Utica. Watched some games, highlight packages. I watched every goal he scored. And one of the things I noticed, and I wrote about it. I'm not sure if I brought it. I think I brought it up on with you here, is that he was nowhere near the net on any. You watch the goals.
Right.
They were exactly like you described, like flying down the wing, sniping one, which can work great on some AHL goalies. It's much harder to do in the NHL to score goals like that. Like, you need generally to be around the net or in the middle of the ice to score goals. Like, those are the spots where you're going to score. Racing down the wing and sniping one on the fly is not going to happen very often, right? Even if you have a Brock Besser shot. So I was jarred watching those clips and games in Utica to notice how little time he spent in and around the net. I was jarred to see there were no rebound goals. There were no bang-bang rebound goals. There were no tips. He wasn't getting in position to get in front of the net and tip a puck. And he had an opportunity, one of the clips I showed, where he's on, they're basically on a 3-on-2, and he had the lead. He could have gotten in position to tip a puck in there, but he kind of let up and was kind of rode the back of a defenseman there. But, man, fuck the hits. Forget all that bullshit. I don't care about any of that. My number one focus, if I were to sit with him and say, like, dude, you got to do this, it would be get to the freaking net, man. You have the size and strength and power and speed to get there and get position. So the speed is important. You got the power to maintain that position. And by maintaining it, you can tip pucks in and slap in rebounds. That's the type of Jake that's the addition to his game in a real way. That, you know, I think that there's other things he needs to work on and thinking the game and hockey sense and all of that. And he's not a finished product by any means. But the one thing, tangible thing, that is far more important to me than hits is to see him in and around the net and battling with defensemen. And we just haven't seen that lately.
PatCast, a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM. November coming to an end here, but November's been the Black Friday month at Eagle Ridge GM, up to $14,000 in discounts. Get huge savings on the largest selection of Silverados and Sierras in stock. Go to EagleRidgeGM.com for full details. And that's one of the things, Botch, that kind of pissed me off on Sunday. Like, I don't coach the team, but, you know, at every game here, we all got our thoughts and opinions. But in games where Jake was going, and he was going at Madison Square, and it goes to overtime. And look, the Canucks played well in overtime. They played well that whole game. They didn't get the saves. We pointed that out. But you and I sat at Staples Center, the first preseason game, and we were amazed at the start of overtime. Why? Because Jake Virtanen was out with Bo Horvat, and Jake had an unbelievable 60 minutes and really probably was the best player start to finish in that game in regulation time, and he got rewarded. The coach slathered him in gravy, putting him out there to start overtime where there is nothing but time and space to use the skills that he got. And again, not every night, but on those nights where he's going, like, why he didn't get a shift in overtime, why he didn't get a chance in the shootout is another story too. That's another thing. Travis Green just, like, he has so little time for the shootout. And yet, it is a part of today's NHL. But, like, his disdain for the shoot, he didn't hold back after the game on Sunday, practice as well. They practiced it on Monday in New Jersey, and as they're starting the shootout practice, Travis is marching down the hall. Like, he's done. He's walking away from practice. He leaves it to Newell Brown. So he didn't even stick around to see shootout practice. But, again, like, three...
You know how I know he gives no fucks about the shootout? You know how I knew? The instant I knew that he gives no fucks about the shootout, the moment he tapped Ben Hutton and said, go out there and try. Ben Hutton has 6 goals in 171 games. 6 freaking goals. He's a defenseman who struggles to get shots on net, let alone pick spots. Once I saw him pick Hutton over other guys, including Jake, who has scored, by the way, in a real pretty shootout goal. Once I saw that, I'm like, this guy does no... He just does not care. And if you don't care about the shootout, you probably don't really care about 3-on-3. So why not let Jake? Like, why give it to Hutton? Like, why not reward? You don't care about it anyway. You know, maybe you care a little bit more about 3-on-3. But let Jake roam. Let him try to do his thing. And certainly give him a shootout over Ben Hutton. Come on. That was ridiculous. How did he answer that question?
That was my point, too, is, like, look, if... It's inevitable that you're going to lose because that's what happens to the Canucks once they get beyond regulation. Like, just pull out all the stops in overtime. Just, like, go for it. Like, you know, and the Hutton thing, I'm not sure that I understand it, especially over, like, Erickson's been playing well, and he didn't get a chance, and he had scored that day. The Twins.
It was a slap in the face. That's a slap in the face to all those guys. It's to say, I don't care about – it's almost an embarrassment to the NHL to roll Ben Hutton out there and say, I don't care about your shootout. I don't care we're paying $6 million to this guy to score goals. I don't care you drafted this forward sixth overall. I'm throwing Ben Hutton out there. Fuck you all.
Well, apparently there was a rumor. This is what he based his choice. Travis had heard a story of Ben Hutton scoring on a penalty shot, and that he bypasses the line. They move the velvet rope for him, and he gets out there and gets his chance in the shootout and didn't do much with it. Not that many guys did. So it is curious. Like, it's part of – and I hear when he says, like, you can't replicate 20,000 people and the pressure and all that kind of stuff, but I do think you can – you know, boil it down to a couple of guys that you trust, that you believe in, and, you know, if you kind of put that on them, and they know that you're their, his guy, you know, maybe they work on some skills and some moves. Like, didn't Sam Gagner used to be on the highlight reel all the time when shootouts started? Like, what happened to Sam Gagner? Like, why can't he reach deep in his bag of tricks? He was part of the shootout, but certainly didn't look like a guy that had ever been on a shootout highlight reel with the move that he used the other day against the Rangers.
No, that was bad. And Vanek's move was bad. I'm not sure what Vanek was doing with that. It was just all around. It looked.
We're never sure what Vanek's doing.
That's true. But it was reflective of how you talk about Travis Green. Like, it looked like a team that had put no thought into it, wasn't organized with the plan of how to attack the goalie. You know, they didn't have a coach stepping in on an iPad with an Apple Pencil pointing out, like, you know, we're a surface. Like, this is where we've had success before. This is what we're going to do. I'm going to go back and watch this Ben Hutton famous, penalty shot overtime winner to see exactly how he did it. But there was no plan of attack there. It was just, it looked roughshod. It looked disorganized. It looked, you know, whatever strikes your mind in mid-stride, go out there and do your thing. And, you know, I those points for a team like the Canucks, if you're legitimately trying to make the playoffs, and this has been, look, Travis Green is not the first coach to give no Fs at all about the shootout, but the points, unfortunately, are important. And I think, though, that the analytics show is basically a coin flip, like, even, I guess, like, I'd rather work to increase my odds, you know what I mean? Like, I'd rather have a plan and have three or four guys, it makes sense to me, that have moves, that practice those moves every once in a while. And, you know, it doesn't have to be every day. It doesn't have to be, it could be once a week. And the three guys get together, they work with this, they have a skills coach, they work with the skills coach, they develop a plan with all the different goalies. It's not that hard to remember. Oh, we're playing Lundqvist, here's what we do. You know, it's not that difficult. It doesn't require that much more time to give yourself percentage points and advantage. And at the end of the season, those percentage points could translate the points, could make a difference in where they are in the standings.
Right. And again, if you suck at shootouts, then win the damn game in overtime. Like, honestly, if he hates the shootout that much, then come up with some sort of strategy to attack overtime and try to end games there. The points are the same, whether you win in an overtime or shootout. And so I think he has gotten better. Like, I wrote a piece about the way that they've approached overtime because, you know, they haven't won a game in overtime. They've lost two, and now they've lost two in a shootout. So they're 0-for in games that went beyond regulation time. Early in the season, like, the first overtime game was Ottawa, and Marcus Granlund led all forwards in overtime ice time. He was my guy at the start of the season.
24.
People keep bringing it up. People keep bringing that up now, and I'm like, oh, God. No, it didn't actually happen. But anyways, you know, he should never play in overtime, let alone lead the forward group in overtime. Second game, I think it was Berchi. By the third game, the St. Louis game, which the Blues won, but they played more than half of the 5 minutes, it was Besser and Horvat. And now we're on to something. Like, best players are out there. You're right. Trying to win the game. And so on Sunday at Madison Square, Travis boiled it down to six forwards. He had three groups. He had Horvat and Berchi, the Twins, which is a little dangerous, but they were playing. They were, yeah. And then his third group was Besser and Gagne. And again, given the season that Sam Gagne has had, and I know he was signed to bring offense, I want Besser out there. There's no way in hell that Travis would trust Jake Vertanen and Besser in overtime.
Why not? You know, that would give Jake so much juice to have, like, you've seen him. You see, like, he can there's a lot of ups and downs with Jake, right?
Sure.
And you know, I thought it was so great at the beginning of the year when the signs were there, finally a coach giving him carrots, and he loved getting the carrot. Like, you can give him the whip, and you can bench him in the third, and you can do those things to him, but give him a pick-me-up every once in a while. Why not? Just, like what do you have to lose? Like, what's the – okay, you lost in overtime. Like, give Jake and Besser an opportunity. Have the speed of Jake with the shot. Like, I think that could be a really good duo, and it could be a really good what the heck – like, let's just try it moment, right? And it could serve a couple of purposes. Heck, you might win the game, one. And two, you're like, I think Jake would take a lot from that. He would get a lot of confidence in moments like that. And the problem that I'm seeing over the course of the season so far, in the 2 months since the start of the year, the carrots just aren't there anymore. There's no, he gets the whip, but he gets no juice in return. He gets no pump up. The tires aren't getting pumped when things are going really well.
I should have mentioned this earlier, but I didn't. But again, the stuff that sticks with people, like, really, I have trouble sort of grasping it. And yet I live in this world, and you do as well, where, you know, people are coming at you on social media all the time. I was trying to have some fun on Thursday night in New York City when we arrived. That was the first night. And I just happened, like, I was out for a walk. It was a beautiful night, my first night in New York City. So I'm just roaming the streets. And I go through Times Square, and then I go over to Rockefeller Center, do some of the touristy things, and I go past the NHL store. And it's closed because it's U.S. Thanksgiving. So I take a photo, you know, and I tweeted out investigative journalism. I was looking to see if they have a Besser jersey. Like, people thought I was serious, like, that somehow, like, that I was on assignment, that, like, TSN had sent me to the NHL store to get to the bottom of, like, the doors were closed. It was locked. It was Thanksgiving. Nobody was there. I didn't care. I just thought, I'll take a fun, try and have some fun with it. Like, people freaked out. Then on Saturday, again, I was roaming the streets and it was open and I just wanted to pop in and see what was in the store. And sure enough, they had a Besser. It was one. It was the only one. They had three Canuck jerseys with names and numbers. They had a Daniel and they had a Henrik and they had a Besser. And, you know, good on them. Like, if they just put it out because the Canucks were in town, like, good. That's good marketing on the part of the NHL and the NHL store. Look, last week when we did this thing, we couldn't talk enough about Besser. Here we are a week later. We barely mentioned him. That's the ebbs and flows of a young player in the National Hockey League. But I thought that was, you know, good marketing on the part of the NHL to at least get a jersey out there. I can't imagine that there's a huge run on Daniel and Henrik jerseys at this stage of their careers in the NHL store in New York City. So, I quite frankly, if I was them, I'd probably have a Horvat and a Besser, probably a few Bessers at this point. But anyways, I thought it was...
Not an Erickson. I got a crazy email from when, right after you put that Besser one out there, this guy... Yeah, I don't really have any reason to doubt him, and I'm hoping to maybe the power of the podcast, someone can verify this for me. But he emailed me and he said he lost a bet about whatever goals or something about, and the loser of the bet had to wear an Erickson jersey, and so they went to the Canucks team store in the arena. No, you can't buy an Erickson jersey. They claim that online there are no, like, stock Louis Erickson, like, you can buy, like, you have to actually, like, order special numbers and a nameplate, like you were doing your own name,
right,
to get an Erickson jersey. They claim that nowhere in Rogers Arena, you cannot walk in Rogers Arena and walk out of there after a game with an Erickson jersey. So that was one of the things that came out. And then I asked you, like, the NHL store, I mean, was that you just, there was no Erickson jersey,
no,
right? Like, it's just bizarre. And I started thinking, like, I don't think legitimately I can remember ever seen, like, this is a guy here for 6 years making $6 million. I don't think I've ever seen an Erickson jersey. Like, it's like Bigfoot. I'm not sure, because I will be aware of it from here on in, and I'm going to be checking the lower bowl, but up to this point in time, if I were under oath, I would say I don't think I've ever seen an Erickson jersey on a fan.
So I tweeted out the picture of the Besser jersey, and, you know, again, like, it's just, it's a stupid store, but I thought it was pretty cool to see a Besser jersey Ovechkin's on one side, Tarasenko, you know, he was in Blake Wheeler, like some real stars in the National Hockey League, and I just thought it made it for a cool picture. Friend of the Provies, though, Dello, he was chirping me on Twitter that, he said, don't you think that maybe somebody knows which team, somebody in the league knows which team is in town, and they put it out just because they know that fans and media will go to the store? And again, if that's the case, then good marketing on the part of the NHL. Sure. Like, this wasn't investing. Like, I wasn't doing any sort of documentary on how the NHL store conducts its business. This wasn't a sting operation. I wasn't undercover. I didn't have like a hat and glasses. You know,
that was his point. I don't even get his point. Like, so, like, they put a Besser jersey. Like,
right? I think he was saying they set a trap and I took the bait. Well, fine. I'm in New York. I was just showing Canuck fans back home what's going on. I thought it was cool that, you know, like, and if
like, even if like the Dello scenario was accurate, like they knew the media would be coming here and they laid the breadcrumbs out. You followed all the breadcrumbs and walked in there. It's still super noteworthy that that NHL store had a meeting and got together and said, you know, how are we going to trick? I don't even get Dello's point. What's his point? I think how are you being tricked? They had a meeting, and they said, like, the Canucks are in town. Who can we put up there? Let's put Besser up. Well, like, that's the guy that's leading the franchise. Right. So even if that all happened, and they put it there just for the Canucks game, that's super noteworthy to me. That's the main guy. The Canucks are coming to town, and who's the mannequin that they're going to put in the window? They're going to put Brock Besser. Yeah, like, great. Like, I don't get how that's a trap.
Well, the other thing, too, a lot of people came at me with, you know, well, you know, the Canucks are in town. No, like, it's an NHL store. Like, all 31 teams have jerseys on display. Right. It's not like the Canucks are in town this week, and now we'll, right. like, get the stock. They're gone now. Get the stock and put it in the back room. Like, it'll stay there.
They're gone.
Yeah, no, it's going to stay there. Look, and if they expand again, that next team will get it. They'll get a jersey in the store. So it wasn't like just because the Canucks were in town for a couple of days. Man. Anyways.
Honest to God, it's almost worth, like, I almost want to go to New York now to do the sting operation for Dello. Like, I'll go there for New Year's Eve. I'll go to the NHL store and I'll, like, take the photo of Besser and send it right to Dello and go, look, dude, if the Canucks aren't in town. You know, I've now completed the official sting. I showed up. There's no traps this time. I'm here unannounced. I slipped into town, and guess who I got a picture of? Besser jersey. No,
the other thing was, people were like, because, again, like, you know, Besser's in amongst these guys that are legitimate stars in the league. And then people are like, it's alphabetical. It's like, okay, Washington, Vancouver, Tampa, St. Louis, they're all towards the back end of the alphabet. They are. But there wasn't a Toronto, there wasn't a Vegas. They're in the store, but they weren't there in that section. So,
right.
Again, if you're going to do this, you got to know, you got to find out, how are the jerseys laid out, and is it truly alphabetical? And if so, is it okay for them to skip a couple of teams? Like, if that's the road they're going down, don't you have to go all in on the alphabet? Like, if I walk into that store, I want to see Anaheim. I want to see Arizona, and then I want it to go from there. I don't want it to be a couple of teams with similar starting letters, and then, like, the rest is kind of random. So, anyways, people were freaking out that somehow, you know, that's the only reason that Besser was beside Ovechkin. And maybe it was, but, again, who gives a fuck? It's the fact that he had...
Now. I give a fuck that Dello got involved. Like, I want to fly to New York now to do this operation.
I didn't have face-to-face with Dello, but I did have an encounter with the Puck Daddy on this trip.
Oh, you did see P-Dads.
Yeah,
What's he up to?
Well, he was at Canucks practice in New Jersey. He's based in Manhattan, and so Jersey is his preferred rink, I think, for the most part. And that was the day that the Panthers were playing the Devils, and the Canucks were on the practice ice next door, and you probably saw the picture of Louis and Schneids and the Canucks training staff, and Tanev was in there. That was a good pick. Didn't run into Luongo. Did have a chat with Schneider on game day when the Canucks were there, but Puck Daddy was hanging out, and
I think he's writing the reduced ice time for the Twins story at some point. I saw he had faced time with both Daniel and Henrik. So,
so we will wait. We will wait with eager anticipation to hear the P-Dads.
But the Dads was, he was around the rink. I should have taken a photo too. I thought of you, and it would have made great Pravi's fodder. I'm kind of kicking myself. But Gudbranson skated before the team on the Devils practice facility, practice ice. And Nolan Baumgartner was working him out. He was working hard. And he was at one end of the ice, and the whole workout was sort of under the shadow of this giant Scott Stevens banner that hangs in the practice. They've got the banners. They got Stanley Cup banners, and then they've got, like, Niedermeyer and Brodeur, and they had this big Scott Stevens banner, and it was just, like, watching over Eric Gudbranson as he did all of his training here. And I just thought, you know, it's a little ironic. Like, the Canucks would love Eric Gudbranson to, be a percentage of Scott Stevens. But maybe he'll be inspired. Who knows? Maybe that'll be a turning point in all of this, that he worked out.
Well, he does have another opportunity to kind of restart things and refresh things. And I think that it's always going to be an adventure for him in terms of moving the puck. And I'm not expecting him to be some breakout puck-moving star at all. I do think, though, it's been a letdown. I think that this is something we can all agree on. I hope. Physically imposing his will in games. That's the selling point of Eric Gudbranson. And I think if you're being honest, it's hard to argue that he hasn't come up short in that department. He just has not done enough physically. And if you're not going to be the slick puck-moving guy, if you're not going to be, if the data, underlying data is never going to, support you, there are other ways. You always talk about the intangibles. To me, J-Pi, I don't know how you feel, but so far in his Canucks career, the intangibles aren't even there. No. Like, that physical prowess is not there. I actually thought I saw more when he had the bum wrist than I made this point before in the podcast, than I've been seeing it now. And now he has a chance, hopefully, to kind of rethink, how he can... It certainly seemed to help Louis Erickson. Like, Louis Erickson right now looks like a refreshed player. He took a break, started off not being Louis at all, I thought, not doing much at all, not having impact, went away for a while, came back, and we're seeing, the legit Louis Erickson. We're seeing lately, I don't know, he will have these fits, like, he'll go on these streaks, right, and then he'll fade away. But right now, we're in a great Louis zone.
Right.
I have yet to see a great Gudbranson zone.
We talked about it on last week's episode, like these mythical talks that Travis Green has had with these players. And the one he had with Erickson was, you've got to be more physical. And so I joked, like, why hasn't he had that conversation? Like, did he keep those speaking notes? And can't he just call Gudbranson into his office? Or, if he's going to go down that road with Erickson again, get Gudbranson to sit in on the meeting, the two of them. It can be like two for one, whatever the case. Like, it just seems so bizarre to me that you implore Erickson and you're getting results, but they haven't seemed to have had this discussion. But and I hear you and I agree with a lot of that. My fear, though, is the more I watch Gudbranson this season, like, it's fine to ask the guy to be big and physical, but this game's getting faster by the week, and you have to have some element of puck skills. His puck skills are in, like, full decline right now. Like, it's just a complete catastrophe anytime the puck is near his stick. Like, he cannot... And I know that, I pointed out on the road trip too, the D-keeper, as we're calling him, and his zone exit tracking, and now that I've made Travis Green aware that this exists. But, like, the numbers bear it out, too, when Gudbranson's, like, he can't clear the zone cleanly. And I just, like...
Well, sure. Like, I think he's a poor fit in Travis Green's system. And that's the funny thing. Like, everyone wants to make this kind of an analytics versus eye test type of argument. But I honestly don't think that it's that argument at all. Like, I think that if you sit down and watch him play and watch him try to move the puck out of his zone, it's off the glass. It's the high flip. It's the hard rim. Like, this basic hockey stuff that he's not doing well at. I don't know how right now you come out of the Gudbranson debate saying, you know, this is the guy we want to re-sign. Like, he's just not, he hasn't played well. Like, bottom line, there's right. no parts of his game so far this year that have gone well. And I hope that that changes when he comes back for a lot of reasons. One, I don't think he's a long-term fit for the Canucks. And I do think ultimately they'll look to trade him. But if he's struggling with the you know, off the glass, the hard rims, and giving the puck away, man, the value is just not going to be there.
Right. And, you know, we see it. Well, so do all the other teams. His agent has to see it. Yeah. He himself has to see it. And that's, you know, it's fine. You can say trade him, but you just wonder about the value of that asset right now because, look, if a team that's going to the playoffs is looking to pick up a player, you know, is he the kind of player? I mean, some teams may be looking to add some depth, but again, this is a guy that wants to hit a home run with his next contract. And I just, I don't know. I have trouble seeing how that's all going to play out for him, but... you know, we'll see what happens. He's not going to play on this road trip, and I'm not sure when he'll get back in the lineup. And Sutter, obviously, they sent him home, so doing some rehab, and they have to get by without these guys and still waiting on any kind of update on Derek Dorsett as well. Hey, I just want to finish up and sort of go back to the Goldobin thing because, again, you brought this up at the Provies last night, and I think it is important. You know, they can say all they want about wanting to get a look at him, but it has to happen sooner rather than later. He's here with this team. That's why I think it makes so much sense to play coming off a crappy performance last night. Turn him loose, let him play, generate some offense. And, you know, I do wonder if it's as simple as Burmistrov out, Goldie in, or if Jake comes out, because, as you said, Burmistrov could be a key figure in all of this.
Yeah, like, I think that Like, look, I think you have to look around the NHL. Who has had success with Russian players, right? They're thriving in Tampa. Why? They're thriving in Washington. Why? Because there are several of them there. And I think that part of the thinking in getting Burmistrov, yeah, Noah Brown loved him. But part of the thinking was there's a guy who can help. He needs help. Like, Goldobin, he does have that fresh-faced, doe-eyed look. Like, he does look like a guy that you know could easily get lost in the big bad woods of the NHL, and he's going to need a guide through all of the challenges that he has in front of him in becoming an NHL regular. And I think Burmistrov, being a Russian, can help guide him along there, can help him. That's their best chance in the locker room. So I do think Burmistrov is a key figure. I would like to see Burmistrov and Goldobin even playing on a line where they can communicate and talk about what they want to do and what they're trying to do fluently. And I heard you make the point on the radio at some point this week, like, why can't Gagne take a seat for a game? Why can't Vanek take a seat for a game? Like, that was the pitch at the first time I talked to the Sedins after talking to Travis Green. They said to me, this year is going to be different. This year, no jobs are safe. No veteran is safe. Anyone can get benched in the third. Anyone can sit out games. And that's the way we want it to be. Well, like, times like this, there's no reason why you can't say to Gagne, like, okay, Sam, we got you for 3 years, we're fully committed to you, but just take a night off. Vanek can take a night off. Other guys, to get Goldobin into the lineup, to get them some juice, to see what can happen. You know, I'm not just pointing out those guys. I think that there's a lot of guys who can take a seat. I do think it's important for it to happen. Because to get to the original point that I was making at the beginning of this podcast, the most important thing that the Canucks, or the most difficult thing that this Canucks team is going to have in front of them, is finding a way to consistently score goals. Goldobin can answer, at least has the potential to be able to answer that. So for those reasons, I think you got to try to get him into the lineup, and there's lots of ways to do it.
All right, last item here on this week's podcast. Well, two things. One is, I mentioned last week that I ran into a guy at the practice rink in Philadelphia, and I got the big J-Pat. And then he reached out via email. Good on him. I mean, my email's out there, but I'm not sure where he found it. But he sent an email, mentioned that he's a huge fan of the podcast, and that it was nice to have met me in person, and he and his brother... we're going to the games, I think, certainly in Philadelphia, maybe Pittsburgh as well. I'm not sure about that one. But I thought, good for him. He took the time. I think his name was Rick. So, hey, Rick, thanks for stopping me in the halls there at Penn U. And thanks for listening to the podcast. The other thing is,
let's make a pact then, given all that we, the ground that we've covered here on this week's episode, you get the New York trip next year. I don't think they'll probably do the six full nights in New York again. Like, that was kind of unheard of. But get the New York trip. You and I will go to the NHL store and, no, look, if all the planets align and everything comes together, there'll be a Goldobin jersey on the rack beside Ovechkin, beside Tarasenko, beside Stamkos, and there in blue and green and white will be Goldobin number 77.
I want, I am going to, because we kind of do it as the trips divide between Kuz and I, it kind of works a little bit like a draft, but I will now put the New York trip high on that list just so I can have the opportunity to go to Parm with you and get the special Drant orange sauce, which I'm going to be thinking about for the rest of the day. Like, what the hell is in that orange sauce that makes it so fucking good that Drant has to get it every time he goes and you get waved off? Like, I have to have this Parm now.
Well, the funny thing I didn't tell you earlier was, so I kind of was flustered because I had made my order there and then, no, he's waving me off. So I have to kind of scramble, and I'm looking at the menu, and I'm like, you know, I just thought, okay, I'll get veal parm, because I like veal parm. No, they were out of veal parm. I guess they'd had a run on veal parm. So now I'm scrambling to find, like, a second choice, and the waitress has just hit me with all these questions. You know, do you want meatballs? Do you want chicken? Do you want, what kind of bun do you want? Like, it was too much. And so I just kind of said yes, and just bring me something. Something that's going to make Drant happy, that's going to make me happy. Just bring me something. And I probably should have tried the orange sauce. I didn't. But anyways, so they bring me my order. They bring our food. Pretty timely. It was pretty quick, I thought. And I'm about to eat. And then a waiter comes over and he says, actually, sir, we made a mistake. And we've given you the chicken. You asked for the meatball. We've got both here for you. Do you want both of them? And I, like, again, it's just overload. Like, sure. Yeah, I'll take it. So they offered me. So I ate the chicken. I took the meatball sandwich home to the hotel. Nice. I started my day today. I got a 5:25 a.m. subway to JFK. I had a cold meatball sandwich at 6 o'clock. Today's podcast is being fueled by a cold meatball sandwich from Parm, and I'm going strong. So that's, again, you got to get to Parm.
Another reason I have to get to New York City.
Absolutely.
The investigative journalism on the NHL store and to get to Parm to eat both a meatball and a chicken Parm sandwich with orange sauce. I'm definitely fucking getting that orange sauce, man. You better believe it.
We'll get to the bottom of it when we get down to Florida and see Drant in person. That's it for this week's podcast presentation of Eagle Ridge GM in Coquitlam, proud sponsors of community hockey. Eagle Ridge GM, your one-stop car and truck center where everybody's part of their hockey family. Check them out online. If you're in the market for a new vehicle, start your search on their website, eagleridgegm.com. We thank you for your support of the podcast. If you can share it in social media, we certainly would appreciate that as well. Botch, I'm on my way home. One final stop here in Nashville. We'll see you at the rink on Saturday. The Mighty Leafs in town to take on the Canucks.
I will be there. See you Saturday.
All right, there you go. For Botch, Jeff Patterson in Nashville. That is another podcast here on Province Radio.